All right.
Today is Saturday, October 10th, 2020. This is a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Richard Hanson, H-A-N-S-O-N. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Richard. How are you today?
Doing well, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your willingness to participate in this interview. May we have your permission to record this interview over the telephone?
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you. Richard, what year were you born?
1948.
Okay. How did your mom meet your dad?
They were in San Francisco. My mother was. My father was a sailor. And this is like right when the war, right before the war started, and they met there. She got pregnant. We went to war. Came back, and they got married.
Okay. Was he in the Navy? Was he in the Merchant Marines?
He was in the Navy.
Okay. What was his position in the Navy?
He was a chief petty officer.
Okay.
He did basically everything. He was a Pearl Harbor guy.
Stop right there. He was in Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Did he ever talk about that?
No.
Okay. All right.
He didn't talk about anything.
Okay. So, and you have older siblings?
Had one older brother who passed about 2 years ago from Agent Orange.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, cancer.
Okay. And so your mom got pregnant, your dad was out to sea, and yet they kept wanting to see each other.
I guess. It's back in the day, I think you pretty much, had to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not real clear on it. I'm as clear as I can be. But,
yeah.
They definitely got married. My father abandoned another family that he had been married to, three kids that I didn't even know about until I was about 16, and finally was able to hook up a little bit with my half sister and two half brothers.
Oh,
but, yeah, it was convoluted.
Yeah. Okay. After the did he leave the service then after the war, or did he stay in the service?
Yeah, no, he left and went to work at Standard Oil Refinery in Richmond, California.
Okay. Is that where you grew up?
We were part of the White Flight. I was born in Berkeley, and we were part of that initial white flight, get out to the suburbs. So I grew up in Pleasant Hill, Walnut Creek, and he went and did his thing, shift worker,
Yep. Did you guys do the summer vacation thing with the packing in the car?
Yeah, once in a while we did. It wasn't a normal thing. I remember the World's Fair in Seattle was one that stands out.
Wow.
Going to, over on the Olympic Peninsula, and then he had a brother in Long Beach. So we would go down there once in a while.
To the ocean?
Yeah, to Long Beach, California.
Okay.
Like the first time I ever sat on an airplane was San Francisco to Long Beach. But yeah, so we did some of that stuff, you know.
Did you learn to swim there?
Where did I learn to swim? You know, I think I took swimming lessons at a pool.
Okay.
In the Bay Area, if I remember right.
Did you like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I did.
And did you go hiking? Did you get out in the hills? You know, were you a bookworm? What were you like as a kid growing up?
What was I like? I was paranoid. I'd get the shit kicked out of me if I said something wrong.
By your older brother?
No, by my father.
By your dad? Okay.
No, my older brother walked point for me.
Okay.
2 years. Until we both went off to Vietnam. He saved me from a lot of cracks, a lot of lickings.
Hmm.
I'll just always love him for that.
Nice. It's interesting. Sailors often can make difficult parents because they don't necessarily learn how to raise kids.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you get older and you, like I am now, and you look back and you know, you have your own baggage, and then you look back and see that the man had to have a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
I think he was a foster kid in Iowa and then Texas. Not very educated, depression, you know, had the Great Depression, and then the war, and then all of that. So he had to have a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
He definitely wasn't a spare the rod, spoil the child kind of guy, that's for sure.
Okay.
But like I said, man, when, you know, we get older and we start looking at our baggage, you can look back and go, well, that's why he was like this. Didn't make what he did right.
Right.
But it made it more understandable.
And what was your mom like?
Compared to, she was Mother Teresa.
Wow.
She was a farm girl from Nebraska. One of five sisters, grew up in a soddy on 640 acres in a sod house.
Wow.
And she was the middle one. She was the third oldest. And each of the sisters, as soon as they turned 18, they caught the train to California, San Francisco.
Wow.
And so my mother, I think, went out there in 33, 34, and was a player. She worked for a restaurant called Alioto's, and Joe Alioto, the Alioto family, basically owned San Francisco. And there's still an Alioto's on Fisherman's Wharf.
How do you spell that?
A-L-I-T-O-S, I would believe.
Okay.
You know, long, big-time San Francisco family. You know, my mother actually went on to be, I think she won the Miss San Francisco World Fair. When was that? 36, something like that.
Okay.
And it was, and she was kind of a San Francisco socialite, barking with the big dogs.
Wow.
Very, very beautiful, very beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful woman.
Nice.
And beautiful with her soul also. And how she ever ended up with my old man, that just... And after he died, he didn't live very long, working at Standard Oil with no fucking safety, you know.
Mm.
Not back in the day, you
right,
know.
Right, right.
Nothing. And I think he was working, he was on the fire crew, and he was working in the asphalt plant.
Ooh.
So who knows what, you know, in like 2 years, or not even 2 years, I don't think, after he retired, he died of just body cancer.
And what he was exposed to as well before then in the Navy and before then as a, mm-hmm. as a young boy, I mean, so it's hard to say.
Right, right, right. My bet would be on Standard Oil.
Mm.
So my mother was just, you know, lovely, just so nice, and just she felt so bad, and she told me she back after he died, she basically apologized to my brother and I for not stepping up when he was kicking the shit out of us. And we just said, Mama, you know, we definitely know how it is, you know, how it was back then, you know. And
yeah.
I think after both kids, me and my brother, got out of the house, that they might have actually developed a relationship where they were both happy for a little while.
You know? Nice, nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, anyway, yeah, I don't understand how this family history even ties in with the Grand Canyon, but you're the guy doing it. So
this is a kind of background on who you are as a person. Did your mom? Did she, you know, really encourage you in education and you know, the things you were interested in then?
No, education was kind of secondary. Neither one of my parents had gone to college. Like I say, my mother grew up in a Saudi and headed out to San Francisco to and got a job as a waitress, and my father bummed around till he went in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And he went in the Navy twice. He got discharged right before the war, and then got called back up, or re-enlisted 8 or 10 months before December 7th.
Okay.
So, yeah, education, you know, I was an awful student. I didn't care. So education and what we, as far as pushing us to what we like, I can't, you know, I can remember one deal that I said, man, I really want to do that. And that was be one of the guys that stands on the side of the garbage truck.
Yeah.
And they pull up, man, and this is before they had all the automated stuff, you know, that they pull up to your deal and they get out and they dump your trash bin in the back and they hop back on the back of the garbage truck. And I always thought that would be just so much fun.
Yeah.
But that was the only thing I really aspired to be.
Okay. And nothing in high school, you know, sort of attracted you to go in a direction one way or another?
No, I actually had a had a couple of classes that I thought, yeah, maybe I should do this, and I was good at them, and that was on the school paper, and with the, I was the assistant editor of the sports page, and then the photographer for the yearbook and all of that. We would develop our own prints, and I enjoyed it. I could get free pass out to go interview somebody, and I could, you know, kids wanted to be your friends because you could get their name in the paper if you wrote about them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. My mother was still kind of tied in with the politicians and stuff, and she would get basically whenever she wanted them, but she would get the mayor's seats for, I was a big Giant fan,
wow,
baseball fan, and she would get the mayor's seats for Giant games.
That's and, cool.
Yeah, it was way cool, man. And we did, we had to write, because the mayor always, when he went, he had to write a newspaper story, or just, you know, like 10 paragraphs or something about the game that night. He always did that. And so then it was up on my brother and I to fill that void. And it would be printed in the Contra Costa Times. My mother saved all those stories, and it's pretty interesting. Now I go back and look, and oh, man, I remember that game. I remember that game.
Huh, what was your brother's name?
Frank. Frank Anthony.
Wow, I mean, that's pretty neat that you two guys would go to the game and write the story and run it under the mayor's byline.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty neat.
Well, we had our own byline.
Oh, okay.
And, that's what was so much fun about it. It was a pretty good sized newspaper, and you'd open up and you know, there it'd be by Dick Hansen and Frank Hansen.
And was Frank doing photography as well?
No, he was more of an athlete than I was. He was 2 years ahead of me in school. He was more of a jock, and he was a better student. And he did, when he got back from Vietnam, he was the first of us to graduate college, or the only one of us, really.
Wow, okay. So, what did he get a degree in?
Recreation. He just
okay.
Yeah, absolutely. He moved down to San Diego, and that's where he went to school. And then he hooked up with the recreation department down there, and he worked with inner city kids.
Cool.
And I still, you know, he was still, up until the day he died, friends with some of the kids that he had
wow,
that he helped out back then.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice. Hmm. Okay, so you, sounds like you're developing some pretty good skills with photography, which is sort of getting a view or an image of things.
Yeah, I was good. I look back, my mother saved all the friggin' papers and the school papers and stuff. But, you know, on the other end, I didn't care about math. I didn't care about anything. But, yeah, I did take some pretty good pictures, you know.
Nice.
Just about every picture in the last 2 yearbooks that I have is things that I photographed. And
were you using a school camera, or did you get your own camera?
No, I had one of those kind of big box cameras that you could go in, and we had a little dark room attached to the journalism office.
Like a Hasselblad, what is it, 4x5 or something like that? You know, they're,
yeah, like that.
Wow, they take great shots. Nice.
So yeah, I like that. I was able to roam the corridors with my camera around my neck, and, you know.
Nice. Okay. And working out the math here, 48, 58, so you graduated about 64, 65?
66. Graduated in 66. Yeah, class of 66. My brother graduated in 64. I think I was a freshman when Kennedy was shot. That's one thing I remember being in class when we heard about it. I might have been a sophomore, but I think I was a freshman.
Okay. All right. And so you're not thinking about college. Were you thinking about joining the service then as soon as you were out of high school?
Well, that's the way it kind of turned out.
I mean, this is, you know, you're born in Berkeley, and that's kind of an interesting place in the early 60s you know, you're in Richmond, so it's far away kind of, but I'm sort of thinking.
It was pretty close. I mean, and we moved out of Richmond, like I said, as part of the White Flight, and settled right near Walnut Creek.
Okay.
City border we were some of the first White Flight kind of people. I think it was, if I was born in 48, I'll bet we moved in 52 or 53.
So Walnut Creek is just, is east of Berkeley, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just right through the Caldecott Tunnel, and it's probably either a 10-minute BART ride or it was a 15-minute car ride.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I definitely participated in some of the stuff going on. But it was more in the late 60s and the early 70s where I really got into the revolution and to the anti-war stuff. But my brother graduated in 64. And he had, and it devastated me when he came and told me, he said, he got a little apartment. He said, I got to get out of this fucking house, man. I said, you can't leave me here.
Oh, yeah.
By myself.
Right.
He says, brother, I got to do it. I've done what I could. And he did that. He had an apartment for about 6 months, and I remember coming over, he came over to the house, and this would have been in late 65, mid 65. And he said, I just enlisted in the Army, and I want to go to Vietnam. And I said, what the fuck, you know? What are you talking about? I was a sophomore, maybe just starting my junior year or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just arguing with them and just, you know, doing that whole deal. So I'll give you the cliff notes. Once he shipped off over there, I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Okay.
And it hadn't really entered my mind up until then about going in the military, doing that, doing this. You know, I didn't have any goals whatsoever. And so that's basically what happened. As soon as I turned 18, I was in Nam in 68, 69. So I might have the time frame just a little bit. It's probably 66 or something when he joined, and he was shipped out and 67, and we were both there for a time where we were able to hook up twice, and that was in 68. We both had our tours extended by 6 months, so we were both over there for 18 months. And then when we got back, we really didn't see a lot of each other. I got back about 10 months after he got discharged, and he had moved to San Diego, and then there's the rest of the story. But
if you're willing, you know, it sounds like Vietnam offered a way to get out of the house.
Yep.
And Frank was there, and he must have been giving you data back about it.
Yeah, you know, it's not like we had cell phones, but
right.
Once in a great while, you could, if there was a ham operator or something, you know, you could go to a rear base and stand in line and maybe get 3 minutes.
Wow. Okay.
To talk, and I think that only happened a couple of times while I was there.
Where did you go to basic training?
I went to basic training in Wichita Falls. I was in the Air Force.
Okay.
I joined the Air Force because they let you pick your MOS, and I decided I wanted to be a medic.
Okay.
And then I went to medical school at Lackland in San Antonio for a long period of time.
Lackland?
Yeah. Or could have been reversed. Did basic at Lackland and did 6-7 months of medical stuff at Wichita Falls.
Okay. Did you like that?
You know, I did. And that was the only time in my life I studied. Because it was like going through EMT training.
Okay.
Maybe a little more intense than EMT training.
Yeah, which can be rigorous. I mean, there's lots of Latin words and anatomical body parts.
Yeah, I had to know all the body parts, man. Had to know how to do a tracheotomy. Had to know how to set IVs. It was a very intense training session. And then I think there was 18 or 19 of us in that class. And the way they did it was where you finished in your class, then when orders came out, you could actually kind of put in a request, you know, of where you were going to go.
Okay.
And I finished third in the class.
Wow.
There was like five slots maybe to Vietnam, a couple to Germany, one or two to Korea, you know. Cape Cod was on the list, based there. So my goal was to get over to Vietnam and follow in my brother's footsteps. And I think also try to please my father, who had been a military man. And, you know, basically thought I was just lost and a piece of shit. And I'm thinking, well, this will bring it, make him proud, you know. I actually had visions of going over there and fucking getting killed, you know, John Wayne shit, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But anyway, that didn't happen, thank God.
What was Frank doing? What did his service pathway take him to?
Brother was basically a sniper.
Okay.
He was a LERP. Call them LERPs, long range reconnaissance patrol, something, I don't, you know. But he tried to do things right when he got discharged. This is before there was any mention of PTSD.
Right.
There was no word for that, you know. There was no word. There was shell shock, or pussy, or coward, in my case, I was diagnosed as a passive-aggressive schizophrenic. So there was no word for... My brother got home right in the midst, as I did, of all the anti-war stuff going on. And he just decided that, you know, he was going to go to college on the GI Bill. He tried for years. He really tried for years to lead a normal life, quote unquote. And it failed. You know, his marriage only lasted a couple of years. Only his beautiful son from it. Started drinking. Basically, he was, you know, got put on the 100% disabled list. And that was that. I'm real proud of the life that he did put together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we like I say, when I returned, we kind of drifted apart after being so close, you know, growing up. So anyway, yeah. That's where that.
Okay. And then in Vietnam, now you've got a great skill set, it sounds like, that's going to serve you well in future years. And yet what you're going to be sent to Vietnam to do, doesn't have a lot of John Wayne there. It's got a lot of pain and a lot of suffering.
Yeah. I just wrote a note to, I was flashing back on 1968, in a Facebook post, and comparing it to this year, and you know, all the turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
In 1968, you know, after Martin Luther King, and then Bobby, and I was a huge Bobby guy.
Mm-hmm.
I really did, and you know, it didn't take but a week to understand that this war was bullshit.
Right.
You know, weak in country. And by June or July of 1968, I was basically addicted to morphine.
Okay.
I was starting to use my own product. I always had access. Being a medic, I was in the Central Highlands. And I just started, you know, help me make it through the night, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And starting to, you know, was smoking a lot of pot. I was still able to do my job. But it was just such trying times, you know. It was like 2020. And besides the COVID, and besides the asshole in the White House, a year and 3 months ago, my wife had a terrible accident. Now she's paralyzed.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm a full-time caregiver, and it's all good, you know. It really is. And she is such a fucking beautiful spirit.
No.
You know, you want to do things for her, you know.
Nice.
You want to go over there and make whatever you can make easier for her. So I just took her down the hill. We live on a four-wheel drive road. And, but somebody gifted us a handy van. Just an unfucking believable gift.
Wow.
But we can't get it up here, so we park it at a neighbor's. So I took her down, and she's back to working 2 days a week. And
nice.
Fighting the pain. And, Yeah, no, man, it's been one of those deals you would never wish for.
Right.
But it was also something that I would say probably brought us closer. And she just, man, she just tried so hard. So
nice.
Anyway, that's
yeah.
what
yeah.
I said, 68 and 2020 in this last 15, 16 months was kind of reminding me a lot of what I was going through in NAM.
But you were able, it sounds like, to keep it together in NAM, even amongst what was sheer hell. I mean, I can appreciate why you might want to turn to morphine. You weren't alone.
No, I was. You know, it was the first time I was ever really exposed to hardcore racism. The military was institutionalism, racism when I was there. And for, I think I spent my 19th and 20th birthdays over there. And I'd never seen any fucking thing like it, you know.
Right.
Fighter jets with the Confederate flag painted on them. Big separation of black and white. The blacks were just treated so fucking horribly, man, that it just absolutely, like I say, about a month after I got there, man, I was just going, what the fuck?
Wow. Huh.
And so it was an interesting time. And 68, it was July or August when I started popping. It was not long after Bobby had been assassinated.
Mm.
And everywhere, fragging started picking up. I felt like the blacks felt when Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Wow.
And that one tore me up too, but Bobby was my guy. And there was no cohesion over there. There was no brotherhood. There was no, you know, you're fighting for the guy in the foxhole. You're definitely not fighting for the fucking country. And so it was real trying on a guy that just turned 68. I turned 20.
Yeah.
And that was in March. I turned 20. And so, yeah, man, I was fucked up.
How did you deal with the addiction when you came back to the States?
Well, that's where we get to the rest of the story. When I got back to the States, I still had 7 months in the military to do. And when I shipped my whole baggage, that's the baggage that, you know, that leaves about a month before you do.
Okay.
I put in, I don't know how many pounds of Thai stick. I'd gotten a bunch of stereo stuff like everybody did back then.
Right.
You know, in Hong Kong, big old speakers and you know, great sound system. And I stuffed the back of the speakers. I did 17 screws in each speaker, and I put probably about 30 ampules of morphine and a few pounds of pot in there. And they came in and packed it up and shipped it home. And so that's how I dealt with it. Up until at 30-day supply, and that's basically how I got involved with wilderness, nature.
Can you expand on that?
When I got home, I had 30 days leave. And being from the Bay Area, I was real familiar with Yosemite. I'd been up there a few times and stuff. And I got another friend of mine who I went to high school with, who had just gotten back from Vietnam, and he is discharged. We decided to make a trip up to Yosemite. And it was that time, and we hiked basically the John Muir Trail as I weaned myself off the narcotics.
Okay. You still had time, some time left in the service.
Yeah, 7 months.
Okay.
I had 7 or 8 months left in the service, and I took that 30 days that I got when I got back from Vietnam. I took that 30 days, and I was going to be stationed an hour and a half from my house for those 7 months, which turned out to be a fucking mistake.
Because you were back in a home situation?
Now is more because I was back into the epicenter of the anti-war movement.
Okay.
Which I definitely supported 100%. And then basically my life just started following this unbelievable road. I call it the yellow brick road, bruh. And I just followed that road, and so that would be 1969, 68, 69. Yeah, and by 19. You know, 10 years later, I was the fucking trails foreman supervisor at Grand Canyon National Park. You know?
Well, wait a minute. That's a big jump, bit too fast for me.
Yeah, I know. I'm just, it blows my mind.
How did it come about?
Well, it came about.
So you would have been discharged from the service.
It's a long story.
Well, here we are.
I didn't get, I didn't get discharged. I got thrown out of the service.
Okay.
As a passive-aggressive schizophrenic. I was very involved in the anti-war movement.
So would this be a dishonorable discharge?
It was turned into a medical discharge because that's when they threw the handle on me as a passive-aggressive schizophrenic.
Okay.
And that, there's a lot that happened to where I got to that point. Hmm. I was court-martialed. I was thrown into jail. I was, I was fucked up. And they had a meeting. I'd just gotten out of jail. And I had deserted.
Okay.
And they found me at an anti-war rally in Golden Gate Park, even though I was wearing a long-haired wig, and court-martialed and sentenced to jail. I had a civilian lawyer at my court martial, and he asked me one question. He says, "Why did you desert?" And I talked for 2.5-3 hours.
Wow.
On that one question, and basically I did it. But the good thing was they took it from desertion down to AWOL. And I was gone about 40-some-odd days, I guess, before I got busted. And again, at that time, I went back up into Yosemite, hit a couple of rallies, and went back up into Yosemite. And I don't know, man. It was just pretty friggin' amazing, you know. And I feel so lucky that that path took me to where it took me.
Yeah, because many other young men just like you didn't make it.
No, no, I could have been homeless. I could have been whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
And
but all of you that did come back had to deal with the same things that you were going through. So.
Yeah, and that's what I told anybody that wants to know that, you know, wilderness, wild places, and mules basically saved my life. And,
nice.
So, yeah, can we pick this up again a little later? Well, we've been talking for a while now.
You bet. Thank you. Thank you so much for going through what you've gone through. And let's go ahead and wrap this up then. Today is Saturday, October 10th, 2020. This is part one of a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Richard Hansen. My name is Tom Martin, and Richard, thank you so very much.
Yeah, thank you, and let me know if you want to do a part two.
I do. Hold the line for a minute.
All right.